KALW.
I think one of the really apolitical reasons why folks want to participate in democracy is they feel like they're a part of something important and larger than themselves.
People serving time in federal prisons are denied the right to vote, but they still care about the elections.
In our Constitution, slavery is allowed for those duly convicted of felonies. And so it makes sense that you don't want your slaves voting.
Today, we go inside San Quentin's mock elections. Then we hear about comic books and mental health for veterans.
This kind of started for all of them as a way for them to use their creativity to heal some of the wounds.
And we explore the passionate mix of music and movement that is flamenco.
You can interpret all your feelings with the flamenco.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Well, Election Day has come and gone. From the highest levels of office to the local school boards, millions of voters exercised their right to vote and had their say. And what we vote on affects everyone, whether they can vote or not. This year, we've been talking to people who don't have a vote but are still deeply invested in being part of the democratic process. Juan Moreno-Haynes is currently incarcerated at San Quentin Rehabilitation Center. He's been organizing mock elections at the prison for more than a decade. They held one in late October. KLW's Johanna Miyake spoke by phone with Juan, who was inside San Quentin, to talk about the history and results of that mock election. Here's Johanna.
This is Global Tellink. You have a prepaid call from
Juan Haynes,
an incarcerated individual at San Quentin Rehabilitation Center, San Quentin, California. This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
So can you give us a little bit of the backstory on the mock election at San Quentin? Like when it started, who started it, and kind of why?
Yeah, so this actually was a project of a colleague of mine from way back in 2008. His name was Troy Williams. And I was on the team where he put together a mock election on the Obama presidency in 2008. And so I just kind of helped out. And then shortly thereafter, Troy paroled from prison, and I just continued doing the work of the mock election from that point on. I just teamed up with the local college here at this prison, Mount Tamalpais, commonly known as Mount Tam, and they did all the logistics of distributing, counting, and everything like that.
Yeah, so Mount Tamalpais College, they're the school that helps people at San Quentin get an associate's degree, right? What's on the ballot? Does it actually mirror what's on the California ballot that every, like, voters outside would normally get?
What we had on our ballot was the presidential race. We had the senator full term and the senator partial term. We had Proposition 5, which deals with affordable housing. We had Proposition 6, which deals with eliminating involuntary servitude in prison. And we have Proposition 32, which raises the minimum wage in California to $18 an hour. And we have Proposition 36, which allow felony charges and increase in sentences for certain crimes. And so our ballot was kind of tailored to the interest of folks who are incarcerated.
Right. Makes sense. And much shorter, I can assure you, than the ballot that I got. So can you give me a sense of why people choose to participate in the mock election?
It's because just because a person is locked behind bars and in a prison, that doesn't stop their concern over what's happening, particularly with the criminal legal system, to incarcerated people. And also, I think one of the really apolitical reasons why folks want to participate in democracy is they feel like they're a part of something important and larger than themselves. They feel heard and they feel that their voice matters. Even though incarcerated people in California are disenfranchised, I had one person tell me that they voted a certain kind of way because they wanted to tell their family on the streets how they felt and how they voted, hoping that their family, who are enfranchised, would vote similarly to the way that they believe.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So are there any barriers to people at San Quentin to participate? Is everyone allowed, or are there any restrictions, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Okay, so the way that my collection was distributed is that we have like couriers who delivered a ballot to every cell. And so we had ballots sent to 3,247 residents. Everyone who's incarcerated at San Quentin had the opportunity to vote. But this is one thing that I did notice about at the end of this election. When the voting was over, ballots were still coming in.
So let's talk about the results.
Yeah.
So and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the numbers I got were 57% voted for Vice President Kamala Harris for president, and 28% voted for former President Donald Trump. These numbers are kind of interesting because this is like a landslide, right? If this happened, outside, that would be a landslide victory for Kamala Harris. In 2023, a proposal was presented to Congress that would allow people serving a felony sentence in California the right to vote, but it failed. Why do you think legislators don't support it?
It's not complicated, but you have to untangle how the right to vote actually works in the United States. It's not a constitutional right, first of all. The right to vote is delegated to each state to come up with their own plan. And so states are unwilling to give felons the right to vote. And so it's this condition of being convicted of a felony. And so in our Constitution, slavery is allowed for those duly convicted of felonies. And so it makes sense that you don't want your slaves voting in your election. And so it's this type of thinking that allows the public and legislators to say, well, if you're in prison, of course you shouldn't be able to vote. You're not even a full person. You're not existing in our communities.
Yeah. So I want to ask, and you can feel free to decline, but do you want to tell us who you voted for president?
Okay, so I haven't made a final decision as of yet, but I could tell you where I'm at. There's absolutely no way that I can ever vote for someone who's dishonest, who can't tell the truth, is deceitful and spiteful.
I really appreciate all of your time today and your sharing all of this with me and with our listeners.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
That was Juan Moreno-Haynes speaking to KLW's Johanna Miyake from inside San Quentin Rehabilitation Center. Incarcerated folks at San Quentin held their mock election in late October. Juan was hesitant to share who he voted for, but has since followed up with Johanna to say he cast his ballot for Kamala Harris. Harris won by a landslide, at least in their election. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. For veterans who may not have easy access to mental health care, art and community are helpful ways to process complicated feelings. That's what inspired Constance Pleasant to start Comic-Con for Veterans. Constance's father was an Army vet dealing with a disability. He loved comic books, and he found that art therapy helped him through his health challenges. In caring for him, Constance noticed a need for connection and camaraderie in the comic-loving vet community. The Veteran Comic-Con features indie comic book artists who are veterans. It takes place this Sunday at the Cartoon Art Museum in San Francisco. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Constance and the event's MC, Billy Anderson.
Constance and Billy, welcome.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Constance, I'll start with you, since you're the founder. What inspired you to start Veteran Comic-Con?
Well, there's there were different things that got me thinking about starting my own Comic-Con, different experiences, starting with my father, who later on in his life, he started using his veteran benefits as far as medical. And my mother and I had such a hard time navigating the system. But the one positive thing that came out of that experience was that he attended an art therapy class, and it really changed his mood. And he was really excited about discovering his artistic talent. So he really enjoyed that experience. So that really stood out in my mind. Then when he died in 2015, after that, my mother and I still needed help navigating the system to get her qualified for spousal VA benefits. So we both joined the American Legion Auxiliary to get support and help that way. And so, while at the same time, I joined AFCOMICON, because Billy and I were the two of the seven, Magnificent Seven, who helped the two founders organize the first AFCOMICON. So that's how Billy and I started working together. And then there was a discussion about how art heals wounds, art therapy. And I know that my father experienced art therapy with the VA hospital. And I started thinking, well, art therapy, Comic-Cons. I could start a Comic-Con for veterans and active duty military. And that's how I came up with Veteran Comic-Con.
Okay, so Billy, you know, there are so many cons. And I know you and Constance, you know, you both love comic books. But this one's unique because it's targeting veterans. But what else is special about Veteran Con as opposed to a traditional con? Like, what are you offering?
Well, I think what makes it really unique is the presence of the veteran artists themselves. And we've got a range of artists. I mean, from guys that are, you know, literally visual artists, guys that are writers, guys and ladies, I'm sorry, that are comic book publishers, all the way to those that just kind of participate in the world of cosplay. I think the thing that brings it together is that factor that Connie talked about. And that is for so many of these guys, some of them that are very well-known international, national figures in the industry, is that at the base of it, this kind of started for all of them as a form of therapy, a way for them to use their creativity to begin, as Connie said, to heal some of the wounds that they experienced during the course of combat or during the course of their time in the service.
So, full disclaimer, Connie is my Sigma Gamma Rho sorority sister. And so I was surprised when I saw the post on Facebook about Veteran Con. And then I saw your name and I saw a link, I think, to an interview you did. And I was like, what? I was just like, I can't believe you did this. I didn't know about this. So when you first started this, Connie, it was online. And you, this last year in 2023, you brought it in person. How does it feel to offer this in person now compared to, and organizing it, and for it to be in person compared to online? How has that been for you?
I feel more of a connection with people, and I feel more of a family, because that's what I was working toward, building a family. And when I see them in person, I can feel that connection with them.
Billy, what does this role mean to you? Because you're the MC.
Yeah, well, it's really important to me for a couple of reasons. One, the reason for which it was founded. My father was a veteran, a combat veteran from the Korean War. He saw combat during that war. And my dad just passed away a couple of years ago at 92 years old. He suffered from dementia. And it was during the period that he got dementia, which was the first time ever that he began to open up to me about what his experience during the Korean War was, what combat meant to him, and what impact it had on him. And I never realized until he was near the age of passing, how significant an impact on his life, who he was, how he ran his life, that experience in the military was. It was difficult for him, but he was also very, very proud of it. When we buried him a couple of years ago, he's buried in a national cemetery up in Dixon, and we buried him with full military honors because it was important to him. So that made the focus of what Connie had put together personal and important for me. The other thing is, Connie is such a fabulous, wonderful, kind, big-hearted person that there was no way that I could say no to helping Connie in any way that I could to put this event on.
Over the past about 5 years or so, again, you've been doing this, Connie. Is there any feedback that has meant a lot to you from attendees?
Yes, a lot of the attendees and the participants, the vendors, they all say that they really appreciate that we're doing this Comic-Con for veterans. They appreciate the support because it's hard and difficult to get support for them. So they really appreciate this con, and that means a lot to me because it makes me feel like I'm doing something worthwhile.
Well, I guess, talking to you, I guess I'm once again reminded that not all heroes wear capes.
Connie certainly doesn't need a cape to be a real hero. That's for sure.
No, she doesn't. Thank you, Connie.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Billy.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was veteran Comic-Con founder Constance Pleasant and MC Billy Anderson speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced with Porfirio Rangel. Veteran Comic-Con is this Sunday, November 10th at the Cartoon Art Museum in San Francisco. Tickets are free for veterans. We'll have all the information at kalw.org/crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. The first Thursday of every month, 2nd Street in San Francisco's SoMa District is shut down between Market and Howard. Instead of cars, street vendors, food trucks, and stages with live performances create a carnival atmosphere, drawing people to the inner city. The monthly event is called Downtown First Thursdays, and KALW's been a part of the festivities since the program began in May. This month, we're bringing international artistry and dance to the 111 Mina Performance Space. Musicians and performers from San Francisco's Teatro Flamenco will perform two 45-minute sets beginning at 6 p.m. The flamenco companies, led by artistic director Carola Zertuche, a lifelong dancer born in Mexico who studied flamenco in Spain before settling in the U.S. She now runs Teatro Flamenco from its San Francisco studio on South Van Ness. KALW's Ben Trefney went there to talk with Carola about the passionate art form bringing together music and movement.
Can you start off by telling me, what is flamenco?
Flamenco is an art form from Andalusia, Spain. And for like the gypsies, it's a life style, no? Like a life. And it's a mix of cultures, Moorish, the Jewish, and the people from Spain, from Andalusia. And all this mix of culture is became flamenco. And then an art form is like any art, no? As a, the voice, no? The singing is the most important, no? In flamenco is the el cante, the singing, no? That most of the lyrics, they tell you a story. And then, of course, you put everything together and you create your choreography or your solo, your piece of music, guitar also, or the singing. When you put it all together, you create that magic
You want to listen all the time, and you want to cry, and you want to laugh, you want to, it's happiness. You can interpret all your feelings with the flamenco.
So you mentioned you're from Mexico, though the art form is Spanish. So do you remember when you were first introduced to it, or was there a lot of flamenco in the world around you where you're from?
No, there was not flamenco, but in my father, he really loved the old music and art, and we always, since I was child, he used to take us to like the symphony, opera, all type of music, or the museums. And then when I was child, my mother, she put me like in first in ballet, but I remember I didn't like it. I was like, boring. But then I hear the other classes was with the castanets, was more classic Spanish. And then I was like, no, I really want to do that. And then my father, a friend of his, they give him a CD, and it was when I hear the first time the cante, the singing of flamenco, and that's what when I was like, like, what is this? I really want to like find out what was, or like what I was hearing, no? And then I saw the dancing, and I went to Mexico City. Actually, I was living in Guadalajara, and then I went to Mexico City to see the performance, and that's it. I was like, that's what I want to do.
How old were you when you moved to Spain?
I think 19.
Pretty young. I mean, that was a big jump for you. What was that like?
It's scary because the same for me. I was first time I was living alone in a foreign country. And pero yeah, in the beginning, I was like all scared. And of course, coming not from my family, always living in my house with my parents, and then suddenly I have to pay my rent, my bills. I was like, wow, it's scary, but then you learn. It's good, no? Because then you learn too.
How long were you in Europe for then?
That time I was like 2 years, and then I moved back to Mexico. But then I was like, oh, yeah, I want to do something different. And then it's happened to... I came here to San Francisco. Same, I was dancing. A friend of mine, he have this gig, they call it. And they say, "Ay, Carola, you want to do it with me?" I say, "Oh, yes, San Francisco. Whoa, of course." And I love the city.
What year was that?
It was 1999. Oh, yes, 1999.
Was there a flamenco community in San Francisco at that time?
Sí, a big community. Was very beautiful. Bueno, until now, it's a lot of flamenco here in San Francisco.
How is the, since you've been in San Francisco for 25 years then, how have you seen it change for dance, for arts, for community?
Bueno, sí, it's changing a lot. When I just came, it was bigger, the community of flamenco. Now it's really nice too, but we have less opportunities, of course, with the funds, because the same, no, we get all the money from the hotel taxes and of course what happened in San Francisco, but all the funds they cut because he's getting less tourists, less, of course, the first things, no, they cut. I don't know if it's the first thing, the true, but the arts.
Is that more recent since the pandemic then? Because, of course, tourism is down and then the hotel tax is down. Or has it been longer than that?
No, I think it's been longer before the pandemic. It started to struggling. But, of course, after the pandemic, more, no? But it was a little before the pandemic. It started to, like, less. And I think for a city without art is not a city. O sea, you need to have a lot of culture in I believe, because it's the culture, is the art is so important for a city.
What are people going to see at Downtown First Thursday at 111 Mina?
It's going to be really nice. I'm going to bring, actually we are going to be, how many dancers? 5, 6 with me. And it will be a very variation. They will see ensemble numbers and then solo pieces,
and then music. And the same, it's going to be some numbers very dramatic, some numbers very happy. And it's, I think people, they will love it.
That was Teatro Flamenco Artistic Director Carola Zertuche speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Carola will lead her company in performances at 111 Minna Street at tonight's Downtown First Thursdays in San Francisco. The first of two sets begins at 6 o'clock. You can find free tickets through KALW's events page and at Eventbrite under Downtown First Thursdays. Tune in Monday morning at 11. In the heart of Petaluma, a small farm is keeping a cherished tradition alive.
It's basically up to us as a collective, like the collective organism of the diaspora, to keep this stuff moving forward, to keep it progressing, even to allow it to change.
The lengths we go to bring a taste of home to new soil. That's Monday morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Eliza Peppel, Jan Ramirez, Clara Kamunde, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Truk Nguyen, Molly Blair Salier, Shirin Adil, Hanisha Herjani, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.